Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks again for joining us. This week, Rick Sharga, the Vice President of Marketing for RealtyTrack, joins us. He's a recent winner of the prestigious Stevie Award, recognizing the major role Rick has played in RealtyTrack's amazing growth. Welcome back, Rick.
Thanks, Bruce. Nice to be here.
What are some of the services investors can subscribe to with RealtyTrack?
Well, the basic subscription gives a investor access to our national database of over 1 million foreclosure and bank-owned properties. And that subscription is $49.95 a month. And it, as I said, gives access to all the properties as well as market estimate evaluations on the properties, an interactive mapping application that we just introduced, and a number of other features.
Do realtors and lenders somehow get a chance to maybe pay for leads and that type of thing? Is that also part of what RealtyTrack does?
Indirectly, yeah. We actually provide exclusive territories for realtors who want to work with buyers interested in these types of properties. And for people who don't want to work with agents, their names aren't sold on lists or anything like that. But for people who would prefer some help, particularly if they haven't transacted in this market before, we wanted to make agents available as a reference or a resource for them, so we include them in the process.
Okay. When RealtyTrack counts foreclosures, does that include all phases of the foreclosure process?
Yeah, that's a great question. We start with the initial notice of default in those states that have that step of the process, and then we also include filings on the notice of trustee or notice of sheriff sale, and on the REOs as well.
Okay, I know there was some concern about double counting. If a property goes through the whole process, then it's naturally going to get named in all three categories at some point. Would that be correct?
That is correct, and it's a little bit overblown in terms of double counting. Anybody who follows a loan or a property through the foreclosure process, by definition, is going to touch that property multiple times.
Sure.
And we do list all three phases of foreclosure. To try and manage the confusion a little bit, though, we recently introduced a new metric, which is what we call our unique household count, that on a quarterly basis will strip out any duplicate records so that we have a list of just properties that were touched at least once.
Okay. Which of these three categories, the notice of default, the trustee sale, and the REO, which of those is growing the fastest in percentage?
Well, the fastest in percentage overall right now is still the default listings. But what we did see in August was an unusually high spike in REO filings. And as your research indicates, that's one of the things that people really need to watch for is when properties start to add up at the later stages of foreclosures. And that's something we're watching pretty closely right now.
In California this coming month, just noticed it in the LA Times on Sunday, there's two auctions. One was something around 600 properties, and another company did another 550, and the auction is being held 1 week apart. And I've been around California for a long time as an investor. I've never seen anything close to that number inside of it a one-week period. So
yeah, and those are probably all REO properties, aren't they?
Absolutely. It has nothing to do with new builder inventory at all.
And that is... kind of mind-numbing when you realize that right now, of all the filings we get in California, REOs still only represent between 10 and 12% on any given month. So imagine what's going to happen when some more of these properties filter through from default into the sales and the REOs.
Well, we go to the sales all the time as well, and about 95% now are going back to the lender because they're just no equity.
Yep, and that tracks. That's one of the reasons a lot of these properties are going into foreclosure in the first place is that the homeowners have no equity, which is making it impossible for them to refinance. So as people see their mortgage rates go up from, you know, $1,000 a month to $2,000 a month and they can't afford them, a lot of these properties are going to go right back to the banks.
you know, lenders are usually kind of the, at least we view them before, as a conservative group that protects their money and loans it out judiciously to somebody that actually proves they need it or proves they can qualify. This time, that just didn't happen.
Somebody asked me at a conference a couple weeks ago how I describe to my neighbors what's going on in the industry. And the best analogy I could come up with was that the parents went away for the weekend and the kids raided the liquor cabinet. and when you look at the nature of the loans that were written over the last few years, if you're a rational person, you have to scratch your head. But the scariest comment I've heard came from a lender at another conference, and I asked him directly, I said, how could you write loans knowing that they were going to go bad when you wrote them? And he said, it wasn't our problem.
Wow.
And the risk has gone away from the lender in a lot of those instances with the securitized loan pools.
Sure.
Wall Street buying the loans. And so, I mean, basically every safeguard that was in the system to prevent this mess broke down over the last couple of years.
Well, what's interesting about that is now companies, let's say like a Deutsche Bank who bought those pools, is now unwilling to buy any more loans. And so it's come back full circle to where now the lenders can't even write good paper and get rid of it at a certain price level anyway.
And that's why we have such a crisis in liquidity in the credit markets. But interestingly enough, Citibank, I guess about a week and a half ago now, announced that they were looking at buying some of the distressed loan portfolios. So apparently there's some thought on Wall Street that these portfolios have been devalued enough where they're good investments again. So the machinations are starting all over again. We'll see where this leads.
Well, I can see if you could buy one of those portfolios at 50% of the value, you might make a case for making profit. But the problem is going forward, we won't
right.
be able to pull that same trick on the parents, so to speak. You know, and the kids say, you know, no, we're not going to have any company over on the weekend. No one's going to believe it this time.
No, and like every other market correction, you see the pendulum swing far to the other extreme. And so right now, people with good credit and employment and a down payment are still having trouble financing new purchases. So it's going to take a while for the market to resettle.
You know, we've interviewed economists over the last 6 or 8 months that thought that the number of foreclosures would have a very minimal impact on the real estate market. Even if they exploded, they thought it would have very minimal impact. What's your take on that?
I think if you look at things nationally and average it out, there's very little that has much of a discernible effect. You know, with all the price gyrations going on in the California market right now, you look at national averages and people are saying things that you know, the prices are going down in single digit percentage changes. So I think what the economists are saying, if you sort of look at the broadest possible market perspective, are probably true. But I think what's also true is that if you take the market down to the local environment, you're seeing areas that are just decimated because of the volume of foreclosures. We're not seeing it so much in California yet, but you are seeing it in places like Ohio and Michigan where the volume of foreclosures in a very concentrated area is driving down prices of the surrounding properties as well.
We've heard that the lenders are working hard with the borrowers to prevent having to foreclose, but looking at the numbers nationally or in California, it doesn't seem to be working so well.
No, and some of the more visible lenders are really getting beaten pretty badly in the press. Countrywide made a point that they'd modified 25,000 loans, and the press gently pointed out that was well below 1% of the loans that were going bad at the time.
Correct.
Having spoken to a number of lenders and servicers, their biggest frustration right now is their inability to connect with the homeowners who are in distress. And there's a complete breakdown of trust and communication between borrower and lender at this point. The borrower's been reached out to only by the gentle voice of Vinny in collections. and I can say that I'm Italian. And it really makes it hard for that consumer to trust that if they call the lender, they're going to find somebody who really does want to help. I believe at the end of the day, the problem is going to get bad enough that we're going to see something like what the White House proposed a week or so ago about a third-party sort of ombudsman being formed and funded by both the private enterprise and probably the federal government to a certain extent, where people can call in and find out what their options really are. But that's the saddest part in this whole mess, is that there are probably thousands of people over the next year that will lose their homes who don't have to, because they do have viable options. They just they'll fail to connect with the lender in time.
Well, you know, I know the lender has been making an effort to call or send mail and that type of thing. But in California, for instance, let's say you're upside down on a $600,000 loan and now you live in a $500,000 home. What will that phone call consist of that will be meaningful? In other words, I don't think the lender can just say, okay, well, we'll just adjust it to the new value. So I guess if so many people are upside down, I wonder what the solution's going to be, even if they do get that third party involved.
Lots of short sales.
Okay. Well,
I mean, short sales are one of the options in a scenario like that, but it really has to, what the lender has to figure out at that point is what the real value of the property is. And there's going to be a loss on the books one way or the other. Do they want to take it in the property sale now, or do they want to take it after going through a foreclosure process for half a year and then having the property on the market for another 6 months?
Short,
so not a lot of good choices.
Short sales in California have gone up from 4,000 to 10,000 in the last 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems that's going on, and this is true with the lenders pricing their REO inventory, is that they're doing broker price opinions and they're using comps. And the the comps have nothing to do with the value of the property that we have to compete with in the MLS. So you look at a comp 3 months ago, it's like it's a year ago now. It's a very different price. And so they're pricing things out at a level they think they're going to get, and then they constantly are devaluing it about every 2 or 4 weeks. If you have an REO, you'll watch the price start to descend.
And that's particularly vexing in short sales right now, Bruce, because a lot of agents are coming in with a buyer in hand and a reasonable offer, and it's taking the lenders so long to view and get back to the agents with an approval or counteroffer that in many cases the property is devalued by the time the response comes back and the buyer has gone away. So as much as the lenders would like things to be better, would like communications to be better across the board, they're one of the biggest problems right now because they're just overwhelmed by the inventory of properties that they're looking at right now.
I think the other thing is they're outsourcing to companies and even to other countries. In the LA Times, there was an article about the broker price opinions being reviewed in India, and that's a pretty tough place to review a local market.
Unless you're reviewing the market in New Delhi,
but
you're right. I'm at an REO certification course for brokers in Newark, New Jersey, and DPO pricing is one of the most discussed topics over the course of the certification program, and the biggest complaint is that the lenders are more adamant than ever about not accepting what the brokers refer to as a realistic price. It's the property valuations have fallen faster than the lenders are willing to accept at this point.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see because the quantity is building. And in California, the counties or the cities that we follow, they're moving about 13% of their REOs. So if they take back 100, they sell 13. Next month they take 100, they sell 13. Eventually, that's builds up some inventory, and that's how you end up with 1,100 auction houses on two successive weekends. And at some point, they're going to have to just go, you know what? I guess it's whatever the last number is at the auction somebody should take.
Well, the common sense school of thought says that the value of a property is what somebody's willing to sell it for and what somebody's willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to put into an estimated valuation module, but that's what the market's coming down to. And I think you're right. I think the fact that we're looking at 1,100 properties being auctioned within a week of each other indicates that something's wrong with the current model.
Exactly.
And as much as everybody I've spoken to in the industry, now in hindsight says, well, yeah, we kind of saw this coming. Obviously, nobody got ready for it.
And I
think that's one of the reasons we're having these bottlenecks in the process. And until some of that gets streamlined, you're going to keep seeing ridiculous things like not taking a reasonable offer but having to sell the thing for whatever they can get at an auction. It's just, it's completely counterintuitive and almost nonsensical, but it's what we're stuck with for the time being.
There's an IRS bill that's, I guess, working its way through to where the borrower that is going to have to walk away and maybe do a short sale won't get impacted by getting a 1099.
Right.
Do you see that having a positive impact on things?
I think it will certainly make the sellers more open to that sort of transaction. I don't think the lenders are affected one way or the other by it necessarily. But I know it's a little controversial in D.C. right now. It looks like they're going to try and push it through as a temporary bill. But, yeah, I think anything that can make the process a little less painful for the parties involved will do nothing but help the situation.
Well, you know, on the positive side, I think you'll probably get to keep that family as a buyer going forward, which if they
right.
had if they had a lien on them, they wouldn't. But the downside is I can see how people would start rationalizing, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, we're $150,000 upside down, and now there's no penalty for walking other than a credit ding. Let's just suffer through that and hand them the property back. I could see that rationale.
Well, you can, and I know one of the things they're trying to be careful about with the legislation is who will and who won't be allowed to just walk away. And we'll have to see how fine-tuned they can make the program when they come around to announcing it.
Okay. What are the numbers that we're talking about as far as in California? How up are we year over year?
California year over year, if you're looking at total number of filings, what you're looking at is about a 246% increase from September to September.
You said 246?
246%, that's right. And that's month over month. What we're going to be looking at in about a week and a half are third quarter numbers, and I'd be happy to review those with you when we have those out as well.
Okay. There's about 8 million residences in California, and yet these little number of foreclosures seem to control the pricing of all the inventory. So that's an interesting phenomenon, but it certainly is true that the foreclosure or short sale is the price you're going to get for your property, even if you're not in foreclosure.
I think people are probably giving foreclosure properties a little more importance than they deserve. I believe that the market is just so slow in the state right now, and the pricing had gotten so out of control that we're just having a reset in the marketplace. And it happens that perhaps some of these short sales that we're seeing are not necessarily claiming the price because they're foreclosures, but it's just what the market will bear at the moment.
Well, I think what I think is really a problem is that it becomes a very high percentage of the market that is for sale. So you go,
right.
You have 100,000 foreclosures, but you only have a California market, let's say, next year that's going to do 300,000 transactions. That becomes a real problem.
That's a good point, and I think a parallel to that point is that a lot of people have just decided not to sell right now. And so you probably are going to have a disproportionate percentage of your inventory that is either in foreclosure or are REO assets. And I've heard stories of other parts of the country, for example, in Dallas, where something like 25% of the properties on the MLS right now are REOs. So you can see something like that happening. And until the sales start to pick back up, which will eliminate some of the downward pricing pressure, you'll probably continue to see foreclosures having a disproportionate share and effect on the market.
Are the states with the most foreclosures typically the same states that went up explosively in price?
About half of them are. You're looking at states like California, Florida, Arizona, and Nevada,
mm-hmm.
where you had really precipitous price increases. But the other half are states where you didn't have those kind of increases, but what you're looking at are unemployment issues. So you're looking at states like Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana that are just getting slaughtered by high foreclosure and very high REO rates. In some cases, we're seeing 40% of our monthly filings in a state like Michigan being REOs. But those were not states with the high appreciation. So there's sort of a bifurcation, if you will, of the states with foreclosure issues.
Well, and Texas, you just mentioned the Dallas market. that had neither high inflation nor does it have high unemployment.
Texas always has relatively high foreclosure rates in our tracking because their foreclosure cycle is so short that virtually, not everybody, but a very, very high percentage of the properties that go into foreclosure become REOs. It's a 21-day cycle.
Exactly. It only takes 3 weeks.
Yeah, so you just don't have a lot of options once you're in trouble in Texas. So interestingly enough, though, Texas is one of the states that's really slowed down significantly year over year. And they're not as problematic as they would have been if we'd had this discussion a year ago.
Do you see foreclosure numbers leveling off or really continuing to rise, say, into 2008?
Well, we're going to probably wind up this year with well over 2 million foreclosure filings nationally. That's about a 65% increase over 2006. And 2006 was a 42% increase over 2005. We're right in the middle of a reset period where a lot of the really most toxic adjustable subprime rate loans are adjusting. And that'll run through November. And we have another wave of those that'll hit about midway through next year, May-June period. So unless something else changes economically, we'll probably see another big spike about the middle of 08. The good news is, such as it is, those are probably the worst of the bad loans. And at that point, they'll pretty much all be through the system. So we'll probably have some trailing REO activity into 09. But, again, if the rest of the economic criteria don't go much worse, the market should at least begin to stabilize after these loans work their way through.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the peak of these subprimes, the ones that are bad, is sometime late this year. But those don't convert to an REO for at least, say, 7 months. Got 3 months of being, late, 3 months of an NOD, a month of trustee sale. So any damage or that first payment adjustment, if it the fastest it might turn into an REO, would be June of 08.
Well, yes, depending on what part of the country you're in.
Okay.
I mean, New York, we're actually looking at well into 09 because it's 455 days in their foreclosure cycle. Texas, it's, you know, next Tuesday.
Right.
But yeah, in a California situation, you're looking at that period of time. And again, if a miracle happens and people start buying houses again, you could see the worst of the damage mitigated. But what I was saying is that the defaults will hit. They're hitting now. They'll probably hit again midway through next year. And the trailing activity on the REO side will move into 09 as well. Absolutely.
Now, we talked a little bit about foreclosures impacting price. What has that been? How has that reacted to in California? I hear the median price is still hovering around pretty good levels, but I don't buy that number because I think we've lost a great deal of the low sales. So it seems inaccurate.
It's hard to track. It feels inaccurate, but it is a median price, and I think your instincts are right. I think what we're seeing is that the new home sales are slow, but they're still happening, and some of the higher-end sales are slow, but they're still happening. And I think we've lost a great deal of the lower end, which are just going back to the banks. And so I believe the numbers are probably a little misleading. I will say that when we track numbers nationally, the average price of a property selling in some stage of foreclosure is still fairly close to the median price that the National Association of Realtors puts out in their survey. So the numbers are down, but they're not down precipitously.
All right. Well, we got one more minute left. Last question. What do you look for statistic-wise to say, okay, looks like things are now going to get better and foreclosures will go down?
As silly as this sounds, what I would really look for first is an uptick in overall housing sales.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true.
And to me, that'll be the first indicator. The flip side of that is at some point, we'll probably figure out that we've hit a bottom. And I think what we'll be seeing is a spike in REO activity that will indicate that most of the default properties that were going to go REO have gone and give the market a chance to catch its breath.
Okay. Well, Rick, once again, thanks for joining us, and look forward to reading the foreclosure data on a month-to-month basis, and we'll talk to you again soon.
I look forward to it, Bruce. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.